This is Pittsburgh Explainer from 90.5 WESA. Every week, we help you catch up on the headlines from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, February 12th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. This week, the Allegheny County Health Department announced that the first case of the B.1.1.7 variant of the coronavirus was identified in the county. This strain is sometimes referred to as the UK variant because it was first seen in that country. It's more contagious than the strain of the coronavirus currently dominant in the U.S. WESA's health and science reporter Sarah Bowden joins me now to discuss what this all means for Allegheny County. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Liz.
The fact that the UK variant is here now, does this mean that the person who tested positive for this variant is the one who brought it into the county? Like, are they patient zero in Allegheny County?
No, the virus is probably already circulating. And the county says that the person who tested positive for B.1.1.7 doesn't know how they got it. In fact, during January 6th Board of Health meeting, Board Chair Dr. Lee Harrison, who's an infectious disease epidemiologist at the University of Pittsburgh, he said he suspected that this variant was already in Allegheny County and that it just hadn't been detected yet. And again, this was back at the beginning of last month. The U.S. doesn't have a very robust surveillance system that would allow us to sequence a high volume of positive COVID test results in order to more aggressively look for these variants. So it's likely that's why it took so long to find a case of B.1.1.7 here in Allegheny County. But again, it's probably been here for a little while.
How concerning is it that this strain is here locally?
Yeah, I'm concerned. B.1.1.7 is thought to be about 50% more infectious than the currently dominant strain of coronavirus. And right now, cases and hospitalizations and deaths in the county and the U.S. as a whole, you know, they keep going down. It really feels to me like we've turned a corner with the pandemic and that the worst might be behind us. But if B.1.1.7 really takes off, that could really go sideways.
So you said the strain is more infectious, but is it more dangerous? Like, will people get sicker and be more likely to die if they catch this particular variant?
At first, it was thought that B.1.1.7 was not more deadly, but now some preliminary evidence suggests that it might cause more fatalities, which of course is very concerning, that a more infectious and potentially more deadly strain of the coronavirus might soon become dominant in our region. Some estimates say that B.1.1.7 might be the dominant strain in the U.S. as early as next month.
Are vaccines still effective against this strain, though?
Yes, they are. While the immune response to B.1.1.7 might be a bit lower, evidence suggests that vaccines do still work against B.1.1.7, especially when it comes to preventing hospitalizations and deaths, which is what matters the most. Also, the same mitigation efforts that protect us against the current strain also protect us against this new variant. The spike on the outside of B.1.1.7 is likely to be more effective at attaching to these things called ACE2 receptors, which are found throughout our bodies, including our lungs. And it's thought that this is how a COVID infection starts. So therefore, you know, wearing masks, staying physically distant, by doing these things, the virus won't have a chance to enter our bodies and reach those receptors. You know, so we know how to stay safe. Our vaccines do work against B.1.1.7. You know, we have the knowledge and the tools to get through this next stage of the pandemic.
Bowden, thanks for explaining all this.
Happy to talk to you, Liz.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us.
Don't get bored this winter. WESA has got you covered. Whether it's virtual or live, our community calendar is your go-to resource for what's happening around town. From lectures to performances, museum workshops to virtual architecture tours, there is still plenty to discover from a safe social distance. Know Pittsburgh better? Visit wesa.fm/events to find your next activity in the Pittsburgh region.
A case before Commonwealth Court could impact the lives of more than 1,000 people incarcerated in Pennsylvania prisons. The Center for Constitutional Rights and the Abolitionist Law Center brought the suit, arguing that the state's policy of sentencing people to life in prison without the possibility of parole is cruel and unusual punishment. Here with more is Tyler Pratt, reporter with WLVR in the Lehigh Valley. Tyler, welcome to Explainer.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having me.
Let's start by setting the table. What is this case about?
Okay, so the Abolitionist Law Center and the Center for Constitutional Rights are calling it death by incarceration. People with felony murder charges sentenced to life without parole for crimes where their lawyers say they did not intend to kill or pull the trigger, per se. Like you said, it's being called cruel and unusual punishment because the only way they will get out is when they die. And I should add here, plaintiffs are not arguing for changes to their sentences or even a guarantee that they will get parole, just that they have a chance to be considered.
Who are the plaintiffs in this case? What are their stories?
The lead plaintiff is Marie Scott. She's 67. She's been serving life without parole for nearly 50 years for felony murder. When she was 19, she took part in a robbery where someone else killed the victim. According to her lawyers, she was serving as the lookout and didn't know her accomplice was going to shoot anyone. Now, the youngest of the six plaintiffs is Tyreem Rivers. He's 42, and at 18, he snatched a purse from a woman. She fell and was hospitalized and later died. And I should add, there's another robbery involving two of the plaintiffs where the victim had a heart attack and died, and they're serving life without parole, but the third assailant in the crime who pointed the gun at the victim got parole and is out free, which raises questions about how the sentencing is wielded.
Speaking of which, the inequity with which sentencing is sometimes handed down, you reported there's a racial aspect to this. Can you explain?
According to the brief they filed with the court, nearly 70% of the life without parole sentences in the Commonwealth for felony murder are black. Yet black people only make up 12% of the state's population. And they're saying sentences for felony murder convictions intersect with deep systematic racism in the criminal punishment system and disproportionately sentencing black people to die in prison for homicides where they did not intend to commit the crime. And we're seeing this argument made across the country right now.
How has the state responded?
So the first arguments have been made, and it really comes down to the state is arguing the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth Court, saying they don't have jurisdiction here. However, judges seem to signal that they do have jurisdiction in this case. So it remains to be seen whether they will hear it. Lawyers for the Abolitionist Law Center have said that should they decide not to hear the case, saying, you know, that they don't have jurisdiction, they'll take it to the state Supreme Court because they believe this court does. I'll add here that Attorney General Josh Shapiro has said that he has to back the state on this one, but has signaled that he is supportive of relooking at life without parole when it comes to second degree felony murder charges. And we should see some momentum on this and discussion moving forward. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman is releasing some information about a study that has to do with these types of crimes. So we might see this conversation ramping up moving forward and possibly some adjustments to how these sentences are wielded.
Tyler, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's time for another break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Noelle King from NPR. There's a lot to keep up with in the news, and one way you can help: donate that vehicle you're not using anymore. It could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Thank you, and here's how to get started.
Visit wesa.fm/cars.
More than 2 million Pennsylvanians are eligible to be vaccinated for COVID-19, simply by virtue of their age. However, just 10% of residents age 65 and up have had at least one dose of the vaccine, according to a new analysis from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Part of the problem is supply. There just aren't enough doses of vaccine for everyone who's eligible to get one. But another issue is that the largely online appointment systems are inaccessible to many older adults. Here with more is WESA's Kylie Kaczynski. Kylie, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Liz.
You wrote in your piece that vaccination appointments are filled almost as soon as they appear online. Can you talk more about that? Like, what did people tell you about the experience of trying to get an appointment?
In a word, it's been impossible for some people. A few people I've spoke to compared it to trying to get a PS5 in the recent months since that system has come out.
Is that a video game thing?
Yes, the PlayStation 5. It's a very highly demanded video game system. It's also impossible to find. And it's an apt comparison because you have to check a dozen or more websites to see if they have appointments available. You have to fill out often the same information, but some websites require different information, and it's sort of a race against time to type faster than the other thousands of people trying to fight for the same appointment as you are at any time you're filling out forms online.
I've also heard people talk about like sitting in these online queues to like get to the point where you can fill out the form, and then they like finally get through the line and a page pops up that says all appointments are booked. Have you heard that?
Yes. A nurse I spoke to was waiting in one of these virtual lines during her workday, and in between patients, she would go check her computer to make sure her session was still active. And she was doing this for hours, and then once she got to the front of the line, there were no appointments available, so that mad dash back and forth from patient rooms to her computer was for nothing.
So what is being done to help people who may not have computers or internet access get vaccination appointments?
So the state and the county have offered these phone lines to help people get appointments. The 877-PA health phone line from the state is the same number you call to get back in touch with contact tracers or to get questions answered about the pandemic in general. This phone line can, again, answer questions about the pandemic and can sort of, operators can sort of surf the state's website to find contact information for vaccine providers, but they can't actually book you an appointment. And then the county hotline was an extension of the county's 211 hotline with the United Way. They, for about 4 hours, booked appointments for the county's Monroeville clinic last week, but all appointments were booked up in 4 hours. And then on Thursday, the state announced the Department of Aging would begin taking calls through its PA Link services. So people can call that department and get an appointment from operators there. And operators are also trying to help people get transportation, which is another issue that's cropped up. And Pennsylvania's Secretary of Aging also recommended people can call their local area agency on aging for some help. But in the absence of a centralized coordinated system from the state, there have been a number of grassroots efforts to try to help people get appointments. Three women started a Facebook group here in Pittsburgh after they had got appointments for their older relatives. It's called Getting Pittsburgh Vaccinated. Leon Bacher, one of the administrators, told me she was sharing tips with people on her timeline so often that she thought a central location for this information could benefit more people. And that's definitely been proven true. The number of people in this group has just continued to skyrocket. Last week, it was at about 5,000, and this week, it's definitely past 13,000. So people on there are alerting each other when and where they can find openings, and some people have started offering rides to people with appointments but no transportation. There's also a website called Vaccinate PA where users can enter their zip code and get results for local vaccine providers with reported supply. It's not clear how accurate this is, and with Facebook, you know, it's not clear how accurate that information is either. So these aren't like state-sanctioned resources for people. These are just, you know, neighbors trying to help their fellow neighbors get the vaccine.
Why aren't health systems yet reaching out to patients, particularly older people, this vulnerable population, to get them vaccinated?
I spoke with UPMC and AHN about this, and their primary reason is supply. That's, you know, what state officials say. That's why vaccine appointments are so limited right now. UPMC is vaccinating some older people in Erie, Pennsylvania. They're going to take lessons they learned from a pilot program there and apply it to Allegheny County once they get more supply. Allegheny Health Network is vaccinating some people over 75 years old. Patients there can check their My Health app to see if there are openings. But both of these health systems say that their, you know, appointments are going to continue to be limited with them as long as vaccine supply remains limited.
Kylie, thanks so much for explaining all this to us.
No problem, Liz.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, wesa.fm, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.